Welcome back, everyone, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, Tony Black, and I'm joined for the second time for our coverage of The Lost Art of Forehead Sweat by Carl something. Oh, Sweeney.
Good to be back, Tony. always fun to talk to you.
Yeah, especially about an episode like this, where continuing our coverage of Darren Morgan's comedy episode, the fourth episode of season 11 of The X-Files. We're talking about the two main guest characters in this episode, Reggie something / Murgatroyd and Dr. Thaddeus They. Two very typical Darren Morgan creations, I would say.
Yeah, as typical as anything created by Darren Morgan can be, I suppose. Yeah. No, I thought they both definitely brought some stuff, you know, into this episode that's worth talking about, didn't they?
Yeah, I think what's interesting about them is that they both tie into the really central, you know, theme of this episode, which,
yeah,
as we've said, is all about truth, reality, perception. You know, and this idea of, you know, is what you think is true or fact or real actually reality? Or are we living in some kind of either alternate parallel universe and they get some good milk mileage out of that one? Yeah. You know, are we in some kind of matrix, or, you know, what is truth, what is reality, and things like that? And this is something, in a way, I suppose, that they're playing with quite a lot this season, in the you know, apart from the political side of things, you know, you've got stuff like this where it's all about an alternate, you know, reality, essentially. We're putting, you know, your consciousness into this digital domain. And now you've got an episode which is all about questioning truth and questioning reality and questioning whether what you perceive is real, or whether or not there's been some sort of manipulation of memory and things like that. And I think Reggie and they, even though they're two very different characters, I really liked that the sort of roles they functioned in this idea.
Yeah, I did too. And I think especially that scene, which I thought was a fascinating one, the one with Dr. They at the, you know, at the statues, where he's kind of, it seemed like he was saying, you know, even, you know, Mulder's kind of like, oh, there is this kind of ultimate truth, you know. And They's like, you know, well, what does it matter anymore, you know? And I mean, these are ideas that have always kind of been part of the X-Files, you know, tapestry, but they're kind of, they sort of can utilize them in a different way now, can't they? Because, I mean, we all know some of the reasons why in, like, the real world. But it's kind of scary, isn't it, how, like, you just get this sense of reality that's been breaking down in the real world. I mean, I'm not saying that, like, you know, we're living in a simulation or whatever. I know there are people who believe that. I think, I mean, if that does turn out to be the case, I definitely overpaid for my widescreen TV. But, I think you're right, though, that there's this kind of unifying theme that's kind of percolating through these episodes, starting, of course, from Scully waking up into a very different world in My Struggle 3 than the one she was in at the end of My Struggle 2, you know. So it's going to be really, it's exciting, really, to see how that's sustained through the rest of the season. And because I think the best seasons of The X-Files do have these, like, thematic undercurrents that maybe they're not in every single episode, but they sort of come in and out as kind of, you know, as the stories demand it, you know. And but yeah, you're definitely right in saying that this has been a running concern so far, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's something that is more sort of obvious and sharp in focus. And maybe this is one of the reasons that, you know, opinions are a bit divided on The Lost Art of Forehead Sweat, because season 10, I think one of the reasons that season 10 didn't quite work all round is because it didn't really have that. It had the whole purpose of it was that it was the revival, it was bringing them back. But then obviously with Chris Carter's interest in, you know, reimagining the mythology in terms of a new paradigm and sort of dialing down the alienness of it, I guess, it kind of at that point, we hadn't quite reached this point yet in the world. We were just on the cusp of it. When that came out at the start of 2016, that was the point where David Bowie died and the Earth span off its axis, basically. And, like, after that, it's all gone to hell in a handcart in the last 2 years. So now they're at a really interesting point in that, had they come back and revive the X-Files and this was happening 2 years ago, you might have found that season 10 was better, actually, and you might have found that they were able to get into a lot of this much sooner and start questioning this idea of, you know, bringing in the idea of fake news. And I mean, there's a lot of people who are saying, you know, that it shouldn't be doing this, shouldn't be bringing these things in. But then, you know, I don't see how it can't. You know, this is the kind of show where even back in the day, I think people forget the fact that even in the 90s, you know, it was bringing in lots of arcane lore and mythology from the real, you know, world, from, you know, UFO lore, from secret experimentation, from all this kind of thing. It was all real. It was just less. It was less in your face and it was less pervasive because we didn't have social media. We didn't have the internet in our lives every day. Now, you switch on your phone and Trump, you can't get away from him. It's impossible to get away from him. And I think people are worried, hard as you may try, I think people are worried now that a lot of these TV shows are being too pointedly, you know, let's have a go at this. But it has to. Otherwise, it's going to occupy this really odd space where it's saying a lot, but it's talking about nothing. And I think...
Yeah.
I think it's this episode really perhaps pushes it to its limits, but I think in these characters, this is kind of what Darren Morgan's been talking about for the last 20 odd years, and I think this is the point where we're in this space now where everything is out in the open. Dr. They says it. The truth is everywhere because we're not hiding it anymore. What's the point? You don't know if it's real or not anymore.
Yeah.
So that's where we are, and it's even more terrifying than the truth being this massive secret.
Yeah, well, Dr. Vey has a very good line as well, where he says something about the president said something very profound once.
Yeah.
And the line was, you know, nobody knows for sure. And
Morgan says, well, what about what? And he says, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. As to your point about the explicit, like, political commentary, I can sort of see the argument against it, you know. And, like, for example, in Plus One, there's the line about, hey, the president's trying to bring down the FBI, where does this leave us, et cetera, et cetera. And I felt in that instance, I mean, you could have easily, that was kind of a contemplative character piece, really. You could have rewritten that to kind of, you know, you could have taken that comment out and it wouldn't have suffered overly.
No.
But I think in this instance, like Morgan's saying, like the reason for doing this story, it's not like the Mandela effect, really. That's kind of secondary. It's the fact that it's about writing an X-Files episode in the world of Donald Trump, really.
Yeah.
So I think ultimately I can see where people are coming from who, I mean, they're right to say that this kind of overtness is not characteristic of the series exactly. But this arguably, I mean, and this is what I would argue, I think, is not a subtle time. It's not a time for subtle, like, bromides, really. It's not a time for, like, witty bon mots, you know. It's a time for a bit of tub thumping in a lot of ways. So,
yeah.
I think what's fascinating is that Morgan's mind went there, you know, and I think he's right. He sort of said that, you know, the X-Files, when it came back for season 10, that run really was about, like, the X-Files and itself and getting it back on its feet. But then if you're going to come back for a season 11, it's kind of like what you said, really. It's like, you know, if you're not going to tackle these issues, what's the point? And I guess, yeah, I think I like the way you said that about it would be saying something about nothing, was it? I think that's quite an apt way of putting it, I feel.
Yeah, I think it's avoiding that, and I think it's like you said, it has to be on the nose. It has to resonate with the times, and you know, it's still through that Darren Morgan prism. You know, I mean, Dr. They is straight out of a 50s B movie. You know, he's like a mad, mind altering scientist. You know, in fact, this episode, thanks to characters like Dr. They, this episode is a very much for me a companion piece to Ose Chung. It's not as good as Ose Chung. There isn't much that is really anywhere, but it's a companion piece in that Ose Chung was dealing with very similar things. You know, in that episode you had, you know, kids having their memories. He's stealing my memories. You know, you had you are very sleepy. You are very relaxed. You know, you had those kind of characters who were these nefarious types playing with people's memories. You know, there were aliens knocking about. You know, you had the brilliant who's that, how the hell should I know, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's the same kind of thing in that you've got Morgan loves when he has aliens in his scripts, he loves them being either, you know, not really aliens or these really sort of arch, like in or like in Ose Chung you had Lord Kimboat, Rocky. Yeah. And now in this one you've got the Trump alien who speaks very much like, you know, like this really ponderous man. You know, and then comes out on his Segway. That bit when he's coming down the spaceship and it's really long. He's just taking forever to get, and then he gets on the Segway and he's it's wonderful. But he likes doing that with these kind of characters, and it goes back to the whole thing that he's been interested in memory and subjective reality for years. You know, you look at War of the Coprophate. Oh, here again. Coprophate, whatever it is. Right, you look at that one, and it's... imagine what I'm going to be like when we get to this in season 3. I'm going to spend the whole episode just... I'm just going to abbreviate it. anyway, he spends the whole of that episode talking about mass hysteria, you know, and people not quite, you know, being terrified of this, the idea of invasion, roaches, you know, and all this subjective sort of, you know, in people's minds sort of being altered by this, you know, idea of this terrifying thing, you know. And then you've got Ose Chung, which is all about memory and all about these things being altered, you know. And now you've got, you know, The Lost Art of Forehead Sweat, which is... Mm-hmm. It's an encapsulation of everything that he's kind of been interested in all along. But now it's as we say, it's out there. It's something that's a bit more overt. And then that's why someone like Reggie is a really... I mean, that it's a little genius little idea to think about. What if Mulder and Scully never remembered they had a partner? I mean, that's absolutely brilliant. And patrons will have listened to this already. But Brian Husky's interview, which is coming very soon, when he told me that twist, I was laughing for like 2 minutes. that was so funny. But it's a great idea of allowing you to play with these ideas in a comic way, yet also talk about all this idea about memory manipulation and what is real and what isn't. And it just for me, it was exactly the kind of thing Morgan has always done. It was just maybe a bit more in your face.
Yeah, and of course the series itself has done it in a lot of other ways too, going back, you know, as far back as like discussion of Mulder's recovered memories of his sister's abduction and so on. So yeah, I felt it was absolutely like appropriate. The one thing I forgot to say about like the political commentary was that I think like when you have the cigarette smoking man in My Struggle 3 saying like fake news, I can see the point there in that including something like that is just an easy way. It's kind of an applause line, isn't it? You get the kind of fans who share your way of thinking, they're kind of clapping along. And I mean, arguably you could have done that differently. And then I suppose if Plus One and My Struggle 3 were a bit like, you know, a bit more subdued in that sense, people may not have so much of a problem with The Lost Art of Forehead Sweat.
It's different though, isn't it, in this? Because this is directly about that whole idea of memory and fakeness and you know, not and believing your own truth. Whereas in those episodes, like you say, it's a bit shoehorned in to be a bit zeitgeisty, I suppose. Yeah. When reality, cigarette smoking man wouldn't care. Like he's involved in some stuff that, you know, he goes way beyond Trump. So it's I know, I agree.
I tell you what, I really liked about, I think the Dr. Vey scene is very well directed, and I think the way it's staged and cut together is very good. The way they move around the statues and so on. Whereas I felt like, this is just off the first viewing, but because the sequence with Reggie in the parking lot is so protracted, you know, I feel like possibly another director could have taken that and maybe made it a bit more visually interesting, maybe blocked the actors in a different way. It felt a little, it felt a touch kind of static to me. And it's kind of exacerbated because it goes on so long. What kind of obviously enlivens it is you've got these kind of cutaways back and forth to how he learns about the Mengele effect or whatever.
And, Mandela effect. It's definitely the Mandela effect.
Well, I remember it being the Mengele effect. But hey,
definitely the Mandela effect.
But I don't know, this kind of modern day Morgan, I'll tell you what it's been reminding me of, because he did the same in Weremonster, didn't he, where Guy Mann was talking and he would, there'd be a flashback to his morning at work or whatever. And I don't know, they seem like Family Guy jokes to me. Do you know what I mean? Where you've got these kind of rapid jokes cut into the action. He didn't do that so much in the old days, did he?
No, it's like a framing device. Yeah. Now that he'll put them in a... I mean, this was the ultimate framing device. And I think this, like you say, this has caused a few people a bit like, well, you know, they're stuck in a parking lot for the whole thing. But they are and they're not, because the whole thing then, it's a lot of it is being told through Reggie's perspective of this, you know, this history that he probably never had, you know, and it's that whole, you know, idea. But it is a framing device. You are right. It is more like an animated kind of sitcom kind of idea in that it, you know, you have the cutaways. But then they've done that in a lot of, you do that in a lot of comedy. You know, things like Father Ted in the UK was full of that stuff, you know, cutting away to a gag or something random and that kind of thing. In this case, it's telling a story. I think it works in the context of telling a perspective. You know, whenever he does this, it's always a perspective. You know, this is Reggie's perspective of, you know, the past and things like, you know, the truth about Grenada and and all this kind of thing. And then obviously, the big thing that people are going to go wild over is him being inserted in all the different classic moments from the X-Files. And it's, you know, that's the real hook for a lot of people, isn't it? I mean, I even though some of the transition stuff was a bit wonky, I did enjoy it. I thought it's very silly, and a lot of shows wouldn't get away with it, but I don't know. I was a bit gleeful seeing him pop up, you know, in Home. Oh, why is she with her son and her oh God.
Yeah, I thought it worked well on its own terms. I thought it was very funny, you know, and like how brilliant that, you know, there's a reference to Teso dos Pichos, you know, after, you know,
also all the episodes. Yeah. Also, when they brilliantly, I don't know how they remembered this, but the moment where, from Young at Heart, I think it is, where he turns and goes, "Hey, Reggie," which is Reggie Perdue, but they splice it into the, it's look like it's Reggie. I thought that was so clever. I was like, you genius.
Ah, yeah, well, that was a callback within a callback, wasn't it? Because I think it was actually the scene from Unusual Suspects, wasn't it?
Where, was it? Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
That's why he's with the lone gunman. Do you remember when?
Ah, yes.
Yeah,
You're right. Because you don't see Reggie in that one, do you? But he's mentioned. Yeah, that's it.
And that's why that was the cut to him putting up the... Reggie was putting up the I Want to Believe poster in the office, wasn't he?
Yes. Just so clever. It does... Yeah, there's lots of things. I think it gets away with it, I would say.
Yeah, and the other one was the like the YouTube video or whatever it was, Dr. Vey's YouTube video, which they watch on the phone and they look at the comments after, and it's like, you know, the editing could have been better. Meh, or whatever. And that reminded me very much of some of the stuff in Darren Morgan's Millennium episode, which is about self-osophy, you know.
Yes.
It was kind of like a long teaser in that, wasn't there, about the origins of self-osophy. And it seemed in that kind of vein to me. And I liked that.
Yeah. Ose Chung's Doomsday Defense, for anyone who doesn't know that episode. Even if you've never watched Millennium, just go and watch that, and go and watch Somehow Satan Got Behind Me as well, which is the other one he did for Millennium, because they are... Yeah, they're brilliant.
Yeah, and you'll get to see Lance Henriksen in a Hawaiian shirt, I think, was it, at one point? No, it wasn't, was it? No, he comes in like a kind of this amped up cartoon private eye, doesn't he?
Yes, yeah, he's like Dick Tracy, isn't he, at one point? Yeah, it's very funny. But yeah, it does. I think the character, I think they were good. I think the way they were presented, Reggie and Dr. They, I mean, the very idea of Dr. They as the name is great anyway, you know, he's talking about them. Who are them? Them. They. Dr. Yeah. They.
and also, it showcased what Morgan's been very good at in a lot of his scripts, which is he kind of, like, puts front and centre the fact that some of the, like, the way the scenes are linked together is very tenuous, you know. So you have this very funny scene in the office where Mulder's like, hey, maybe I've lost it, you know, past my prime, whatever he said. And then, of course, the phone rings and, oh, it's Dr. Vey, you know, and then he's straight off to the meeting at the statues, you know. Morgan kind of gets away with it, whereas, you know, the kind of causality, you know, you'd expect it to be stronger from another writer, or you know, other writers might strive to make the kind of the linking, you know, forge stronger links between the scenes, but Morgan just kind of seems to go with it.
Yeah, he can get away with it, I think, because it's comedy, because it's knowingly comedy, because it's not playing by traditional rules. It doesn't have to play by traditional rules, really, which again explains like the framing device and the cutbacks and things like that. It doesn't have to, you know, do that kind of thing in a way.
But it's also because, like, you know, because he's talking about there not being an objective truth, or, you know, and in the Weremonster, the monster's talking about, hey, there's no internal consistency, but there's no external consistency, you know. So he kind of draws attention to it at the same time as he kind of... you know, he's kind of avoiding the kind of formalities that a lot of other writers would go through.
Would go through it. Yeah, it's true. Before we go, second best line in the episode. We did the first bit, for me, anyway. We did the first best line at the end of Foxy and Skulls. Yeah. But for me, second best line, end of the episode, Reggie's in the car, being driven away, Skinner comes out. Well, where the hell are they taking Reggie? Look between Mulder and Scully like, what? Best yeah. Skinner cameo ever. And I realised, Skinner, I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Skinner was ever in a Darren Morgan episode.
No, that's right. And I mean, I think you can tell that Mitch Pileggi's been waiting like almost 25 years to get into one. He wanted to kind of package it all into that 6-second cameo, yeah. Didn't he?
He got and he it. Did it. He nailed it. He nearly stole the episode with that.
Swinging for the fences, definitely.
Yeah. But yeah, so we're going to be back talking a little bit more about Darren Morgan and this episode, and we're going to talk about the man specifically and try and unpick some of the Easter eggs that we may have missed throughout the episode and things that Darren Morgan always stuffs in. So join us next time for that. And before we go, we'd just like to thank our newest patrons who have signed up to the XCast Patreon community on Patreon, which has just been set up, and which you can join at www.patreon.com/thexcast. So if you'd like to join the following people, then go to that page and check our Patreon out. But a huge thanks to Andrew Blaker, Jen Ferguson, Michelle Milbauer, and Jeremy Daniels. You guys are awesome. We can't wait to have you on the journey. Yeah, thanks for listening again. And always remember, trust no one.